And I don't know the words to that song, apparently.
That's all right, because we're back in the DFSR, and you're here with our NFL podcast for Friday, December 1st. I'm Doug Norrie. That's a Grateful Dead singing.
James Davis on the podcast, gonna blow your damn mind.
We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to get you started, help you keep winning with FanDuel and DraftKings NFL, NBA. It's all covered under one subscription package, free for 3 days, and it's $34.95 a month after that. You go over to DFSR.com/NBA. We'll get you started. That'll give you access to all of our projections, optimal lineups for all those things. We have a member-only chat that's going that will be going 24/7 if you go and sign up. So go check it out. Free for 3 days, $34.95. Don't want to misquote. Don't want to bait and switch you. $34.95, and you're all set to go.
All right, let's do one more take on that. That wasn't quite it. I think I messed up my part a little bit.
No, I was perfect though.
Okay. All right. Whatever.
So week 13 in the NFL coming up here. Pretty interesting week coming off of the Washington Dallas game last night. That was pretty damn boring when it comes when you look at all things, because I really didn't watch too much of it. But Dallas just rolled all over the Redskins, and that's kind of all she wrote probably for the Redskins season. But we're gonna get and talk, go through each game here, and just talk about some of the fantasy implications. If you want to go back and check out our week 13 cash game plays, that's posted as well. We ran through that yesterday. That'll cover a lot of guys that we might just sort of gloss over here because we went a little bit more in depth on them yesterday. So go check that out if you want to. And we'll just kind of reference the guys we spoke about there in terms of just whether or not you want to be playing those guys in cash. So we'll roll through the games here and just kind of break them down and see what some of the fantasy implications are. The first game is at 1 o'clock. It's the Patriots and the Bills. Bills are making up now for the Tyrod Taylor Peterman mistake that they just kind of, I wouldn't even call it a mistake, because a mistake's like, I don't know, mistake's like when you, like, you know,
when you put your wallet between two pizza boxes at my house and almost got it thrown out, right? Like that was an honest mistake.
Right, an honest mistake. It's just how you just lose your wallet. This was just an epic disaster. But they get back to Tyrod last week, and it looks like he's going to be the quarterback going forward. New England's a -8.5 favorite. We talked a lot about Tom Brady yesterday. We talked a little bit about Brandon Cooks. I'm wondering your thoughts here on a couple things. One, the New England running game. You know, they've kind of shared the carries a lot. Lewis and Burkhead seem to have sort of solidified themselves as at least the guys that New England's going to play. Do you think that either of those guys has tournament upside in this? I don't think you can do it for cash, but in terms of just like rolling them out in tournaments, do you think there's a case to be made for Lewis and Burkhead, both coming off of 15 and 13 carry weeks last week?
Yeah, I mean, Lewis did a lot with his touches. It was quite good on a yards per touch basis. Didn't get in the end zone. Burkhead had a similar number of touches, wasn't quite as good on those touches, but did punch in 2 touchdowns. So I think, you know, both of them should be in consideration for your pig tournaments, your big tournaments. Yeah. It's like the Fox and Sox books. Shout out to all my dads out there listening to this one, and moms too. But yeah, so it's kind of weird. Like, you'd like to see a consolidation among the guys, among carries, among touchdowns. I would guess Burkhead probably has the higher upside simply because of the touchdown potential. I think some of Lewis's big runs were just a matter of luck. Like, it's, you know, he's not going to have 10 yards per touch going forward. So I think if you do see consolidation around performance, just based on the touchdown basis, Burkhead would be the guy I would lean towards.
I think you're always looking at Gronk too. He's still just such a huge red zone monster. He did score 2 touchdowns last week, has 3 touchdowns in his last 4 games, and then 5 in his last 6 games. So the red zone usage for him is through the roof. He's very expensive though for a guy who doesn't see huge amount of target share, right? Like, you know, when we're paying $8,100 on FanDuel, at least, or it's up in that same range on DraftKings, that price, sometimes we want to look at price, how it's compared to just touchdown performance. And Gronk seems like one of those guys that's probably like public name / touchdown upside without being a huge double digit target guy. Do you agree with that assessment on him? Because he's a guy that people want to play, but he always just seems a little too expensive.
Yeah, I think he's too expensive. I mean, for big tournaments, there's almost no such thing as too expensive for Gronk, because he does have the highest upside by far of any tight end on any given slate. But the target share really hasn't been there. I mean, if you looked at any other receiver this season, because Gronk is a receiver who just has the tight end designation, and their maximum targets was 10, and they had only hit that twice over the course of the year, you wouldn't normally be talking about an $8,100 player, for certainly not for cash games. So for big tournaments, sure, but for cash, no thanks.
Buffalo side, they're going to be playing catch up here. We talked briefly about Tyrod Taylor just coming very cheap in a game where he's probably going to be forced to play catch up there. We have seen Shady McCoy's rushing numbers historically are better when Tyrod is the quarterback, though that has not really borne itself out too much. I guess he was very good against the Chargers when they had Peterman, and then which is in a completely just crazy game. He ran the ball 22 times last week, but only had 49 yards. Is there a way to get upside on McCoy going into this week? I know they're underdogs here, but they seem to use him. He's a very good running back. It's just that doesn't seem like that's the problem. It's just like the team doesn't seem all that good. Do you think there's upside on McCoy here?
I mean, maybe the game script would have to go absolutely perfectly. I think if you do decide to play McCoy, it almost makes sense to play Brady plus somebody as well, because in that bizarre instance, Buffalo would be up here. I mean, Buffalo is 6-5, so they're not a terrible team in a vacuum, but they would be up here. They would be running the ball to try to extend the lead and to try to slow the game down, and the Patriots would be passing to try to catch up. So I think that's kind of the big tournament stack. The other thing you have to like about Buffalo, just generally speaking, is that all of their good other skill position players are hurt. Off the top of your head, I mean, I know you did the audit this week, but do you know who the target leader was on Buffalo last week?
Zay Jones.
10 targets. You could add up the next two guys to get 8. and one of those was McCoy. So unless you want to play Zay Jones, which, you know, buyer beware on that one, I think you're probably just looking at McCoy is the only viable guy. And even him, you're not going to play him for cash either.
Yeah, it's so hard to target anything in the passing game. I mean, Charles Clay does have upside in him at times. They don't want to throw the ball enough. It seems like they're going to want to throw the ball here. But even when they're down, they don't throw the ball a lot. They're content to just still try to run and try to catch up in the games like that and run Tyrod a lot. I mean, Tyrod does run a ton. So, yeah. It's very difficult to trust anything really here in the passing game at all. But I mean, Tyrod's coming off a week where he ran the ball 9 times also. So, that's the kind of the point I had made for him, for possible cash gameplay on at least DraftKings this week. All right. Another 1 o'clock game. Detroit goes into Baltimore. And a game that I have no interest in watching at all, but maybe if you're a Detroit or Baltimore, I don't even know how much of Detroit and Baltimore fans would want to watch this game. The injury news and notes here, they both revolve around the running back. Amir Abdullah is hurt right now and is not practicing for the Lions, so unclear about whether he's going to not be able to run. I mean,
because he's not that he was able to run already, but this would make it even worse.
I mean, that's what I was trying. I was trying to make a joke about that, but he can't run when he's on the field, and he won't be able to run when he's hurt. Does the Abdullah thing do anything for you? And the same kind of question goes for Alex Collins, who also just showed up in the injury report. If either of these two guys were to sit, would you have any interest in either of the running games?
I mean, maybe you look at Theo Riddick. Zach Zenner's a guy who got some touches in the past, hasn't really touched the ball much this season. I know they don't really consider Riddick an every down back, typically speaking. So I don't know how much more opportunity it gives him, but at 5,200, if you did get the word, say that he was going to be the starter or they were going to ride the hot hand or something, I think he could be in consideration. But I guess the question you'd have to ask yourself here is he's only 700 cheaper than Abdullah, and nobody had any interest in playing Abdullah in this thing. So unless the Lions are just terrible at talent evaluation, which, you know, again, who knows, one would stand a reason that Abdullah is the better fit there and he's just still bad and the team just can't run the ball. So no, I don't think I would be looking at the Lions there.
Yep, and I agree with you. And Baltimore's a good defense. Anyway, we did talk. We talked a little bit in the week recap about the question surrounding Marvin Jones and Golden Tate. This probably isn't the matchup to go. Although, if you think they're going to be able to run the ball even less than they were already not able to run the ball, there is some chance that you do see some outsized targets in the passing game. Collins is interesting too because Baltimore all they want to do is run the ball. Right. They're pretty effective at it too. And if Collins were to sit, that would open up a lot of carries, I believe, for guys like Javoris Allen and Danny Woodhead. There are home favorites here. If Collins were to sit, any interest in the running game on that side?
I mean, I guess, I think that Collins sitting, it's not like a situation where, you know, for some other teams that it opens up 16 carries a game. So that's really good. But I guess the question one would have to ask oneself is, do they really want to give the ball to Allen way more than they have in the past? You know, like they've given him 17 touches in some games, but his touches have kind of gone in the wrong direction. And again, he's just been so ineffective when actually touching the ball that I'm not sure playing him at 5,600 would be that dissimilar to playing Abdullah at 5,900 if Abdullah were healthy. So I don't think so, I guess. I mean, Woodhead's kind of interesting, but again, I don't see Woodhead sliding into that main ball carrier role either. So I don't know, the situations are odd and they sort of mirror one another. It's like slightly ineffective running games with a weird backup situation. And I mean, maybe people would. I don't know what your take is on it, but off the top of my head, I don't feel great about it.
I consider Allen, I think, and I'd be worried that they would just split carries. I will say that the Vegas likes this game for points, and more points than I thought that would be for Baltimore. Baltimore's pushing up against 24 implied points, which for them is very high. So I'm not exactly sure where that's completely coming from, but that was a line that opened at 40 over under and is all the way up to 43.5 with most of, well, it's actually coming mostly even on both sides. So the scoring at least is supposed to be kind of sort of there for both these teams, and it's just a little hard to figure out where it is. And if there were injuries, I guess we would be able to consolidate some of the usage, and just right now that's some of the news we're gonna be waiting on. Minnesota goes in to face Atlanta. They're still going to start Case Keenum, it looks like, as long as, I think they want very, very badly to bench him, and they just can't because he still keeps playing pretty well week after week. They go and face Atlanta. Atlanta's going to get Devontae Freeman back. He cleared the concussion protocol, so the value that we were getting on Tevin Coleman over the last couple weeks is pretty much gone, and then probably just takes both those guys back down to the middle. We talked a little bit about Julio Jones. Let's just go back real quick because we didn't break it. We kind of chose Keenan Allen, or I chose Keenan Allen in the cash game spot. Do you have any other final thoughts here on Julio Jones that we kind of didn't put out there on the podcast?
He's going to have one of the highest yards props for the week. If you can afford him, I think he'll probably be on the right side of the chalk here. I mean, maybe not. It'll probably wind up being somewhat close just because he's a little bit banged up with the ankle right now. I don't know. I mean, I don't personally want to play him, I don't think. And I'll be like kind of scared if he gets targeted four times in the first drive. So that's kind of where I'm landing on him right now.
Yep, I feel the same way. He's a guy that our system is never going to, has had trouble keying in on times because he's so variable in his performance. When you project through weighted mean averages, then that's going to drive guys like Julio Jones low, even when we are bullish on his targets, which I think we have been. And then we still kind of just didn't get totally there last week. I don't mind at all pivoting to Sanu in a game like this, where I think Jones's ownership will be completely nuts. And Sanu has had a very, very good season. The targets have been there for him, the yards have been there for him, and also the touchdown. So if you think Jones, if you want a GPP pivot in this game and wanted to get some exposure, especially with Xavier Rhodes likely blanket or blanket coverage. I totally forgot the word. What's the word shadow for when coverage. You oh my god what shadow coverage. You think he's in complete shadow coverage, then I think that the pivot to Sanu there is okay. Minnesota, they're underdogs here, so it doesn't seem like they're gonna be totally incentivized to get the run game going all the time. Any thoughts on their run game and or the guys we've been interested in on a week-to-week basis in Thielen and Diggs?
Thielen looks great to me. Thielen's a little cheaper and nothing has changed at all fundamentally about his profile. Just goes out for another 11 targets, 8 receptions, 89 yards. Not phenomenal production on a points per dollar basis, but still very solid. A little tidbit for you is that prior to last week, Thielen had outscored Julio Jones in 4 of the previous 5 weeks. So I think Thielen just represents overall higher floor, more target share, probably less of a downfield risk, but plenty of touchdown potential as well. So I do like Thielen quite a bit. Diggs is more shooting the moon to me. The targets haven't been there nearly as well. He does represent that downfield risk or downfield ball guy. So he can catch long passes. He could put up multiple touchdowns theoretically. It really hasn't come to fruition with Keenum under center. So I don't think I like him nearly as much. And the running situation, I mean, I know you and I talked somewhat at length about Murray and McKinnon last week. Murray goes out there, gets the 20 carries, punches in a touchdown, has that kind of classic solid but unspectacular overall line, you know, getting the 84 yards in the touch. McKinnon heads back to where he came from, which is obscurity. So I don't know that I would really like either of these guys, but I think if I had to pick one, Murray seems like an okay big tournament play.
Yeah, there's a scenario where Minnesota gets up here and they do lean on Murray. That's what they did last week on Thanksgiving. Right. And that was one of the reasons we were kind of discussing these guys, is because that was just that three-game Thanksgiving slate. So we went into a little more depth on, you know, our thoughts on where we stood on the Minnesota running backs. But yeah, there is a scenario where they will give there are very few running backs in football who a team has shown that they'll give the ball 20 plus times to in a game. And Murray is one of those guys, and he's not all that good of a running back, but if they get ahead, there is a scenario where you can like maybe stack Murray and a guy like Julio Jones together, where you think one team is trying to run it out and the other one's trying to play catch up. But it also doesn't feel all that likely that Minnesota is just going to run out to a huge lead on Atlanta. Tampa Bay goes into Green Bay. bunch of injury things here. I believe Jameis is going to be back this week under center. Doug Martin is in the concussion protocol. So Tampa Bay is kind of in a, just kind of in a weird spot. And then we have the Green Bay side where Aaron Jones is back practicing, though people seem to think that he is not going to take the field. Let's start with Green Bay on the Green Bay side, where, you know, we talked a lot about Jamal Williams, that if Aaron Jones and Ty Montgomery were both not to play this week, we think he would be just going a complete chalk play.
Correct.
But you've been a guy that's very high and been very, very high, at least like for the last 3 weeks, on Davante Adams. Has anything changed your opinion about him? Just seems to continue to do it here with Hundley under center.
Yeah. I mean, he's like a slightly cheaper, and for good reason, Adam Thielen. I mean, he does basically the same thing that Thielen does. He's still a red zone target. Three straight weeks with nearly identical fantasy point totals, 16.7, 16.6, 17.5. I think that he's just the number one option in terms of them trying to get first downs. And for a team that doesn't probably want to take a lot of risk with Hundley under center, I think he just represents another great play. Terrific value. I just can't imagine that he's going to be anything other than 10% more expensive by the time the season's over.
Yeah, I mean, right now we have him on FanDuel ranked as the fourth highest projected wide receiver ahead of guys like Thielen. And this is, some of this is matchup based. He and Thielen are basically close.
Thielen better. Like, if I had to do a no halftime challenge, we'll do a spot for them in a second. If I had to do a no halftime challenge, I would take Thielen over Adams, but I would think about it first. And I'm not sure if I would actually accept it if it were in the app, because I don't know if I would want to expose myself to that level of variance.
Yeah, no, and those are the ones that are close. But there's definitely some guys lower on the list, like Alshon Jeffrey, Sammy Watkins, guys that other people might just see as just better fantasy commodities. Mike Evans is another one that we just have at this point, have Davante Adams just for more overall points than. So interesting that the way that his season sort of rounded out with Hundley under center. Tampa Bay, like I said, Jameis is back. Any interest with going back to a guy like Mike Evans here? Price has dropped. Targets have kind of been there with Jameis. Conversion rates are not that really haven't been there. But any interest in like maybe that pairing with their quarterback back under center?
Yeah, only for big tournaments. I don't love Jameis coming back, just like stepping right in, trying to get back up to game speed. Evans is cheaper than he has been historically when they've been paired up. So, I mean, the conversion rate's never going to be good on Evans, but he definitely has that Julio Jones 44-point upside type of thing. And you're getting a discount on that potential here. So I don't mind people giving a shot for it for big tournaments, but just know that you're taking on a lot of variance if you do.
For sure. All right. Tell us about no halftime and then we'll roll through some more of these games.
Yeah. No halftime, in case you couldn't gather it from my little teaser before, Doug, is an app that you can go download at nohalftime.com. And what it does is allows you to play one-on-one daily fantasy sports challenges directly from your phone app or iPad or whatever other device you have there. So the way it works is you go in there, you pick a player you're high on for this week, say it's Mike Evans, and you say, I think Mike Evans is going to outperform Adam Thielen. I bet you could get that accepted if you issued that challenge. You issue it for any number of dollars that you'd like. If someone accepts it, it's game on. If not, you get your money back. You can also go through and troll through their app for any other challenges that other people have issued. There's always good value sitting around on nohalftime.com. Works really well with our app as well, or our, I guess, software program that you get by accessing our website, not technically an app. But yeah, go on over nohalftime.com. Use promo code DFSR to get a 50% bonus up to $50 on your first deposit.
The next game on the list here, we have Houston going in and playing Tennessee. Tennessee's a -7 favorite. Houston is still going to start Tom Savage at quarterback this week, and they're still without Devontae Foreman, so they've kind of turned more to Lamar Miller. They're big underdogs going in here against Tennessee. Tennessee news and notes are that Rishard Matthews, who didn't play last week, is still questionable to play this week. Let's start with Tennessee. The run game is been the Henry and Murray show. They split carries directly down the middle last week. They split snaps down the middle. 32 snaps for Henry, 31 for Murray. That's been basically the case all season long. It's a shame because we'd like to see this -7 favorite for a home team and want to target one of the running backs here. Do you think that's in the cards for us, or do you think that their prices just remain to the point where you can't really withstand the risk knowing that they're just going? I mean, by the way, one side note, Murray completely sucked last week, 12 carries for 9 yards. But
Murray questionable right now too, by the way, with an illness. So, I mean, illness doesn't tend to make football players leave games when
this isn't basketball, baby.
No, I know, when they're questionable on Thursday. God, I know, the NBA flu, I'll get you every time. But I do think it's at least worth keeping an eye on. I mean, Henry's has been so much better on a points per touch basis that I can see people taking a stab on that for big tournaments, but it's probably not for me personally. It's just not the kind of risk I tend to take. It's all well and good to say everyone's a potential viable GPP play, but I'd like to see it happen. I'd like to at least be there some strong narrative that suggests that what I'm envisioning could come true, and understanding that I'm just going to miss out sometimes on the random backup running back who gets all the carries because Le'Veon Bell gets hurt or whatever. The other interesting thing for Tennessee last week was there were people who tried to take a stab on Corey Davis and on Eric Decker, neither of which really worked out. Would you be interested in potentially exploring that avenue if Matthews were to sit again?
Probably not. I was sort of close to talking myself into those guys. Not so much Davis, more Decker. Davis, I think, is kind of overrated at this point.
Yeah, he had a decent cash game ownership on FanDuel last week.
He did, I know, and I looked a lot at him prior going into the week, and knowing
just
that
just recreationally, you're saying
just
Google image search, okay?
Corey Davis wife, like that kind of stuff. Corey Davis girlfriend, like those searches that I love. But like the conversion rate has been very bad. The track record just really has one good game. I was more interested in the possession part of Decker. I mean, that didn't work out either, so whatever. But Delaney Walker was another guy that we talked about where he's led the team. They just didn't have to pass the ball that much. They only threw the ball like 29 times or something like that. Walker only had five targets as well. He did catch a touchdown. You think you want to do that? You think you want to maybe like talk yourself into the Titans thing, and then you just realize that they just want to run the ball too. Like they're happy if they're, especially in a game that looks like it's going to probably play out with them ahead. The part where they just run the ball 25, 26 times again with these two running backs just really decreases the upside on any of the wide receivers. So that's kind of where I land. What are your thoughts here on the other side with Hopkins? The target's still completely nuts for the most part. And he still has Tom Savage as his quarterback. Like, I don't know. He 10 targets. He had a good game last week, 7 for 125 on 10 targets. Are we willing to go back down his kind of road, knowing that he still has Tom Savage, but the price has really come down?
Yeah, Hopkins to me is kind of like when you see those high school girls basketball games where one team wins 138-4, you know, and you're like, this lady, whatever her name is, has scored 112 points. It's a new high school record. And you're like, okay, you know, like 112 points is all well and good, but in the game it ended 138-4, like I could take it with a grain of salt. I think that's kind of how I view Hopkins' target share, because on one hand you can look and be like, Hopkins, Doug, is the best target guy in the whole league. But we just know that those targets aren't created equally with guys with actual good quarterbacks. I mean, there's two games this season where he has had 16 targets, and the most passes he caught in either of those games was 7. So it's, you know, yeah, sure, he can get there. And sometimes he's just going to turn that into 11 catches, and he's totally going to go off. He's actually been good on his price the last 5 weeks. You'd probably be satisfied with his production in each of those weeks. And he's clearly the target for first downs in the red zone, long passes, every pass basically. So yeah, I think Hopkins is a reasonable option, even at 8,000. Just understand you're taking on outsized risk. A lot more, there's a much lower floor here than I think it appears based on the overall target share.
Yeah, the conversions were crap for everyone else too. Like Bruce Ellington had 8 targets, only converted him to 3 receptions. CJ Fedorowicz had 8 targets, only turned him into 4 for 37.
Hopkins was actually good on this basis last week. I mean, 10 targets, 7 catches is excellent. I just don't know that you can count on that going forward. The 4 catches on 9 targets the previous week probably paints a more accurate picture in my mind.
Oh yeah, I was using the other guys to illustrate that you're just going to this is still bad quarterback play made up a lot by you just have, you know, one of the top 5 best receivers in football on the other end of that quarterback play. Savage just has accuracy issues, and that's why there was talk about benching him, and he wasn't benched, but we're still kind of just getting the same quarterback out there. A lot of targets, and it's going to be hard to imagine doing a ton with him. All right, Indy goes in and faces Jacksonville. Jacksonville -9.5 favorites here. Whenever we see that home favorite, whether just like this many points up, we really want to probably start honing in on the running back situation. And then they also have Leonard Fournette, who ran the ball 12 times last week for 25 yards and still is kind of possibly nursing an ankle injury. Where do we land on Fournette here? Because from a strict context standpoint, this is basically the perfect time to target a running back. And yep. I don't know, man. I think he was outsnapped by Yeldon last week. He was outsnapped by Yeldon 34-28. He stunk when he actually ran the ball. What are your thoughts on Fournette?
Yeah, I'm nervous about Fournette. I don't think I would wind up playing him. I think he would have been like an 85% cash game play if this had been right after his Rams game in October. But since he's been hurt and been ineffective when he's been out on the field, I think he's just a total fade for really all formats for me, unfortunately.
He's a complete tournament play for me. I think there's bounce back territory for him. I think that he represents, because I think that
you're just paying a lot for it, right? I don't know. It's I hear what you're saying.
Oh, he's expensive. He's the second most expensive running back on FanDuel this week at 8,700. So, and I think that when people look at it, they're going to look at, so if you want to like think sometimes about just where you can pivot in tournaments, if you think that one guy is going to be highly owned or well owned in a tournament, and this place I'm going to use Todd Gurley. Actually, I'll use Kamara too in this, because they're all kind of in the same range. If you think that those guys are going to be higher owned and they're all in the same price range, you can basically make the same lineups that you thought you would have made before and then just swap in the guy that probably will have very low ownership and I think get separation, because I think there is a scenario where Fournette just has 120 yards and two touchdowns, right? Like I think that he has that in him for sure, and this game script seems like it could line up to him doing that. And I also think people look at that 12 carries for 25 yards and say, oh, I can't do it in cash games, and I might not even want to do it in tournaments because it seems like it has such a low floor. But I do like kind of rolling him out, possibly in tournaments, just for that, because I think people will just look at that short term and say no thanks.
One phenomenon I've noticed when making my own tournament lineups is one way, and I think other people do this too, just based on casual observation, is so say you have a guy like Gurley and you love Gurley this week, and he's in all your cash game lineups. Now, when you go to make your big tournament lineups, you just normally just export all your lineups and then just start editing them. And if Gurley's there, it's so easy to just be like, oh, I'll run the same lineup, but with Fournette. And I think that you'll see some of that this week. I think it'll be higher owned for tournaments than maybe he ought to be on his merits alone. But do agree with you that the upside is there.
Yep. And then on the passing game, Marquise Lee was a guy that we liked for multiple weeks. He drew some weird coverage last week. He only saw two targets. And then we saw DeeDee Westbrook get 10 targets, only turned him into 6 for 41. Anything you like in the Jacksonville passing game here with them big favorites?
Yeah, I'm not going to play Lee. I'm just concerned about him being limited in practice, last week's performance, the knee injury. Like, I just think there's enough going on there. An already unspectacular receiver dealing with knee injuries is not really where I want to land. I do think Westbrook's pretty darn interesting, though. I mean, the guy's only played 2 games, but 6 targets and 10 targets in those 2 games. Clearly just a possession guy. Like, he's not turning those into any real downfield progress. But if he's the option when they want to just move the chains, I think he's pretty, like, there's pretty good upside on a guy who has 10 targets last week for 4,700. I also know that when I played guys like this in the past, to a man, it's gone extremely terribly for me. So I don't know if it's where I'll land, but he's certainly an interesting play.
Yeah, he was a guy that people really liked coming out of the preseason, because he was like one of those preseason all-stars that just like had some highlight reel stuff, but then you realize it's just the preseason. Then he was hurt for a while. He's got a lot of confidence. I read an article with him that was like, oh man, I'll have a 200-yard game this year. Like, he just said something like that. He hadn't even played yet, by the way. Like, I was like, gotta love that kind of confidence. I wish I had like even 10% of that. It's just such a...
Unfortunately, that probably just means he's really stupid. And that's the only takeaway I got from what you just said.
It could be, but you can still be good.
Stupid man is going to try and put up a 200-yard game this season.
And then in terms of Indy, I think that you can play Jacksonville D in your DFS lineups. Going into the two more 1 o'clock games, San Francisco goes into San Francisco goes in to play Chicago. San Francisco is going to start Jimmy Garoppolo this week. This is a guy that's been pretty highly talented.
A guy that's been a guy. That's true.
Came in, played one drive last week and threw a touchdown and looked pretty confident. They paid a lot for him. The Patriots did not want to get rid of him. The consensus among among the football, just about football people that actually watch the games, not like DFS touts, like the actual guys like that watch film, seem to think that Garoppolo is the real deal.
He was on the field for 3 snaps last week.
I understand that. I'm saying that the thing, he also started for the Patriots in the past though, and there's just I'm saying that people that watch football, like GM types, they think Garoppolo is a good player. Do you have any interest in playing him this week, as in just kind of like a just throwing it out there, we don't know what we're going to get kind of thing against the Chicago defense? And then on the Chicago side, we talked briefly about Mitch Trubisky only because he was so cheap on DraftKings. Any other thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I'm absolutely not going to play Jimmy Garoppolo when I can play someone like Brett Hundley. I feel like Jimmy Garoppolo, the wildest fantasy upside scenario is that it just hits Brett Hundley's probably expectation. And I don't think Hundley's fantastic or anything, but I just think, like, it's not like he's just stepping into the 2010 Patriots and he's just got, Wes Welker in his prime and like all these guys. He's just walking into San Francisco where none of these guys can do anything. So the short answer is no, I'm not going to play Jimmy Garoppolo. I think some people will. And I think if they do it for cash games, they're incorrect. I don't think that's a good plan.
Oh, yeah, I'm not talking about for cash games. I think that'd be totally crazy. I think that this is one of those complete unknowns. And there's value in unknowns, right? Like, because a lot of times...
That's true. Like, how about Deshaun Watson?
A lot of time the unknown will just be the guy's unknown for a reason, right? Yeah, right. Like, if we don't know about this guy because he stinks. Garoppolo doesn't fit that complete mold. Like, he is a guy with pedigree. So I think that sometimes in the unknown, you can buy at the absolute lowest. Like, so if I were to make a bet right now, at least on FanDuel about Garoppolo's FanDuel price, do I think it would be higher next week or lower than 6,300? My guess it's higher. And I think there's some chance.
Only because he's just a starter and starters tend to be cost more than that, you know?
It could be, but that would still mean, I mean, not if he stunk though, it wouldn't move. There's other starters here that are in the same price range. Like Ryan Fitzpatrick was a starter.
Mitch Trubisky right across the field from him there.
Right. About in terms of price.
Yeah. Just like I'm agreeing with you. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, there are just a lot of other starters that are in this same price range. We talked about Trubisky. I think, you know, what are your thoughts here on Jordan Howard? He's a guy that we've liked in the past. San Francisco is a good DFS matchup. They play they've played at a pace that allows for a lot of opponents' possessions. Chicago is a home favorite here. Howard has been pretty unspectacular. At least last week, he was pretty bad. Any thoughts about going back to him this week as a guy that they wanted to give volume to in the past?
Yeah, it just looks like it's in the past to me. I mean, they gave him absurd volume early in the season, and then it's just totally disappeared the last three games, 15, 15, and 7 carries. Like, that's not the kind of track record I'm looking for to pay $7,500 for. So it kind of reminds me of Fournette. I think there's definitely big time upside here if it just so happens that it was game script. Like, if the excuses we would normally make for a guy like this are actually true, then he probably is a pretty solid play. But it's buyer beware. It's just, you know, you're going to be at the risk of finding out after the first half when he has 4 carries. You might not feel so hot, but yeah, he could. I think this is actually probably his most likely game for the rest of the season to just put up one of those big time games. So
yeah, that's kind of where I land. I think there's a chance that he has a huge game, and
he
can
have a huge game. He could have 30 carries here. I have no confidence either way.
This is a guy, again, like he falls into that Fournette range of, like, I think this is exactly the kind of guy you want to take a chance on in GPP, because if you look at the Bears last 4 or 5 games, they've been losing every single game. Even in the Saints game where it was close, he got a lot of carries. They were down very early to the Packers. They were down early to the Lions, and they were down and they just got completely crushed by the Eagles. But if you go back to where they are actually up in the games against teams that, like, they maybe were able to sort of hang with, and there's some chance that they can, if San Francisco is not a good team, that you're going back to 23, 21 and 36 carry. So I think that of all the running backs in this price range, this, like, Christian McCaffrey, Carlos Hyde, even to some degree Melvin Gordon, I think he has, in terms of upside, the highest upside. I think he has a pretty damn low floor, as we've seen when they fall down, and Chicago themselves are not a great team. But in terms of upside, I think he rates to me among that group as a candidate that could hit 30 touches. And I just think that there's the percentage on it is low, but I think it could happen. All right, let's keep going through some of the rest of these games here. Casey goes in to play the Jets. Casey's broken my heart. I hate Casey I don't like them as a team, but man, we've been wrong pretty solid for the last 2 or 3 weeks on their performances here. Do you think there's any chance that they kind of just turn this thing around with Smith kind of returning to be a quarterback that's fantasy viable? Kareem Hunt, we've lamented the death of him. Travis Kelce's a guy we talked about yesterday. Give some any other broad thoughts here on Casey going forward as an offense.
I don't think I really have any, like, big breaking news that I didn't share yesterday. I do think I still don't want to play Kareem Hunt. You know, the opportunity and what he does with the opportunity is still not in line with a $7,000 player. So I don't think I want to play him. I think Kelce is a very good option at tight end, really, for any format. I think Hill still has upside, but I'm concerned about Smith's recent performance. I do like the 11 targets from Hill last week. That was his season high. So if you think you could potentially be buying low on him, I think you'd still rather play other guys in a similar price range that maybe have a higher floor. But for upside, I think he's a solid spot there.
And then the Jets, we talked about Robbie Anderson in the week recap where he's just caught touchdowns each of the last 4 weeks. I felt that it wasn't sustainable, but I think you thought that the targets maybe were good enough. Austin Seferian Jenkins.
No, I don't think I'll clarify on Robbie Anderson. No, I don't think that you can count on him to continue to average more than a touchdown a game like he has over the last 5 games. It just reminds me of Julius Thomas in the old days, like, where people are like, yeah, I mean, he only gets 5 targets, but if 2 of those are touchdowns, it's like, nope, that's not going to happen here. So I'm not a buyer on Anderson at all on this price, even for big tournaments. I think he'll actually be overrepresented in ownership for big tournaments, specifically because of the touchdowns. And I don't think that they're in any way sustainable. I wouldn't be surprised if we'd seen his last touchdown for the season, Frank. So.
Denver goes in the last 1 o'clock game. Denver goes in to play Miami. The news and notes here, Denver is going to start Trevor Siemian. So they're just kind of keeping that quarterback carousel going. So must be fun to be a Denver fan this season with that, with the cast of characters they've thrown out under center. I don't know what you can do with this Denver team right now. The quarterback plays terrible. They haven't made a commitment. CJ Anderson early in the season seemed to really the running back. Now they say they want to get Devontae Booker more touches. They all kind of stink. So I just don't really know what you do with the Denver side. And then Miami, Jarvis Landry is a guy we've liked in the past. And we've kind of wanted to target him based on his amount of targets. Are we willing to do that against a Denver team that has, is going to be without a key, without to leave this week. And does give them a hit to their secondary. Do we have any interest in the Miami passing game, knowing they're going to be without one of the better corners in football?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, I think Landry probably represents Miami's best option here. Well, especially how are the cornerbacks shaken up this week? That's kind of your area of expertise. Are Parker and Stills going to get the actual good players, or is Landry going to be up against the good ones? I'm not the cornerback.
Landry never draws shadow cover. I'm still reeling from not being able to, I was just completely blanking on the word shadow coverage before, but Landry never draws that because he lines up out of the slot. And like we've said many times, very, very few teams move any other good cutover corners into the slot because it's such a divergent move from like what the rest of how the rest of their defense works. It's one thing to move them from one side of the field to the other. It's another thing to just completely line them up on a different part of the field. So guys like Landry, and this is why, again, these slot receivers by and large are the highest targeted guys. Landry looks like, according to Pro Football Focus, looks like he has a pretty plus matchup this week coming out of the slot against Harris. So, I mean, Harris rates out well, too. The plus on Landry is that he's been so damn good out of the slot that he gets a slight bump, but not anything kind of outsized. The rest of the guys are kind of just in that nothing really happens to the point where you would make a huge deal about it. It does not look like they're going to get shadow coverage on either of the other two guys. So I think there's a case to be made for it. And it still feels bad targeting Miami wide receivers or guys, just wide receivers in general against Denver. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I think that makes perfect sense. And so in that case, I think Landry is a reasonable option. I still think you'll probably, like, for cash games specifically, you'll go in the direction of Devonta Adams, probably Cooper Kupp. Both those guys are cheaper, better matchups, and probably safer opportunity. So I think you'll probably lean in that direction, but if you can go three possession guys, I think Landry would make a reasonable third option.
And they do get Cutler out of the concussion protocol, though, for our purposes, that really hasn't seemed to matter, whether it's Moore or Cutler throwing the passes to these guys. And most of the thing we just liked about Landry going forward is that, or just in general, is the targets. Actually, one other news note on this is that Damian Williams is hurt and out. They have been running a running back tandem between him and Kenyon Drake. With him out of the mix, do you have any interest in them consolidating a lot of their carries to Drake? I mean, they ran the ball close to 20 times last week. Didn't look very good, but any interest knowing that he seems like he's probably just going to be the guy out of the backfield?
No, probably not. I mean, Denver's a good running defense. Drake has not been effective at all on a yards per carry basis the last 2 weeks, 16 carries for 24 yards, just garbage. At 5,800, he just reminds me kind of, even if he were into that, to slide into that role, then he would just be like a poor man's Amir Abdullah in my mind in this spot. So no, I wouldn't be playing him here.
All right, moving into the 4 o'clock games, Cleveland goes in to face the Chargers. Chargers, huge favorites, biggest of the week, 13.5 now against Cleveland. Cleveland's been basically, their goal this whole season has been trying to just cover the spread and not really ever come close to winning. I honestly feels like if you kind of just even, I haven't really watched much of Cleveland, but even if you just watch the box score of what goes on with them, like there have been so many times they've just gone down early in the game, gotten close to scoring and just thrown an interception or missed a field goal.
Quick, Cleveland 0-11 this season, famously. Do you know what they've been against the spread while going 0-11?
I know it's been close, and I know they've missed the last 3 weeks, but it's been really, like, really, really close. My guess is they are 5-5.
They're 2-9 against the spread. So they managed to lose every game and somehow not cover in 9 of those 11 games. That's pretty amazing. Well,
last week, they had the craziest one because they were going to cover, and then Jacksonville intercepted a ball and ran it back for a touchdown on the last play of the game. like garbage time. It was the only scenario where they weren't going to cover, and then they just can't cover. So there's been some weird fluky, maybe their whole goal has been to not to cover and to look like they're trying to cover. So maybe that's more what it is. Anyway, we talked a lot about the Chargers yesterday. We talked about Melvin Gordon. We talked about Phillip Rivers and Keenan Allen. It seems like those are just kind of the three guys. And the only other news, Yeah, I don't think we need to go back too much. If you want our thoughts, go back and listen to yesterday's podcast. And the only other news note is that Josh Gordon, after a four-year absence, is going to take the field and run all the snaps at wide receiver one. Any interest in Josh Gordon that hasn't played? I mean, this is like effectively like leaving high school, not playing all of college, and then going and playing in the NFL, like the amount of time that he's been gone. Any interest? Do you think people will take a shot on him just because of the name?
Yeah, and I won't.
I knew that you were going to say that. All right, Giants go in and play Oakland. One of the more interesting – so the big news this week, obviously, is that the Giants are benching Eli Manning in favor of Geno Smith to, quote, see what we have in these guys. I guess to some degree, if you're like a talent evaluator and you don't know what you have in Geno Smith, right, like already
– I saw him on the Jets, and I got to say, I thought it was a coaching issue, frankly, was my take. Like, yeah, I don't know.
It just makes no – okay, so now if you played like Davis Webb, it would make sense to me. He's like, okay, we actually don't know what we have. He's a rookie. It was our second year. Like, we don't know what we have. Maybe we just want to see what he looks like under center. We're clearly just tanking at this point, and we won't need – like, we just already going to fire the coach, if not at the end of the year, probably before. So I get that part of it. So there's that part of it. I mean, in a previous life, I was a huge Giants fan. I have no like emotional connectivity to whether or not Eli is a starter. Seems like a lot of other people do. Like if my Facebook feed is anything. My Facebook feed is just packed full of Giants fans because that's basically like, I don't know, half my friends on Facebook, especially like all the guys I went to high school with that we grew up with are Giants fans. But they seem to be very bummed. So there's that piece. I think the most interesting thing, though, from this week is that the line started the Giants 16.5 implied points. And when they benched Eli, it went up to 17.25 points, which I'm just like, oh man, I expected to see it just completely drop off. I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen to this line? They benched Eli. And I just kept refreshing some of the books. I was like, they must not have gotten the news yet. Ooh, it went up a little bit. Maybe they really don't have the news. I'm like, maybe they just hate Eli Manning. Anyway, long story short, you can't target anyone of the Giants here. Even with Sterling Shepard coming back, with guys like Evan Engram, there's just too many unknowns. This is Geno Smith throwing in passes. Now, the more interesting team to me here is the Raiders.
Yeah.
We talked about the Raiders wide receivers yesterday. The Raiders are huge favorites at home.
Mention those Giants names. Are going to be names people don't recognize. Some people.
Cordarrelle Patterson is one guy. Seth Roberts is another guy. And Jared Cook is the tight end. Are three guys that are completely in play. Now, my question is, Derek Carr is coming up pretty high in our projections right now. And in fact, if you just run main slate lineups, he is the quarterback in top lineups. Would you be comfortable running him in cash games without all those wide receivers? They have a high implied total. They've wanted to run the ball at times, but this seems like a really good matchup. What are your thoughts on Carr?
It's a good matchup. It'd be really hard to play him at 7,600 given the tools he has around him right now. Just so many unknowns, not a lot of known playmakers. The potential to just run the ball and make the game end is so high when you got a guy like Geno Smith on the other side of the field. Keep in mind with Smith, too, he's also just an interception machine, which can be really bad for opposing quarterbacks. Like, not only does it give you good field position, which isn't good for quarterbacks to get their yards, but it can also just make defensive touchdowns happen. I would be pretty nervous. There's a lot. I know the implied total is pretty solid here, but keeping in mind that some of that could be accounting for defensive touchdowns and whoever knows what else, I don't think I would prefer to roll a guy like Carr out there.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I've debated this because I was wondering how much of like not having Amari Cooper would helps Derek Carr's just conversion rate, because Cooper is just it's just such a bad receiver when it comes to just actually catching balls. So I was wondering if in some ways it just helps him to not be forcing the ball down the field to a guy that just simply can't catch a ball on
maybe
any consistent basis.
Though, and like he's just got nothing.
That was a problem. Right. So that was and then the other guy here is Marshawn. I'm wondering your thoughts on Marshawn Lynch. Last week he carried the ball 26 times and also had three receptions out of the backfield. If we were setting his just implied carries in a game that looks like it's going to could script really, really well for him, where would we set him in terms of just the kind of usage we can expect out of Lynch this week?
Well, that's a tough one to answer. And I think, you know, when you get a matchup this good with all the question marks around the receiver play, you really want to dip into the running game. The fact that he had 26 carries, it wasn't very effective with them, but it was a tough matchup against Denver. And the fact that he got the goal line carry, got the touchdown, got the three targets, three receptions for 43 yards. I actually think Lynch is sort of a good play this week. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm low on his. I think I'm low. I have him right now for 15 carries and two targets, and 15 could be really, really low. And if you think that is low, especially knowing we know he's the goal line back, so the touch that he's not going to get lose touchdown equity to anything outside like the 5 yard line, or excuse me, to anything inside the 5 yard line. You wouldn't think, especially considering Crabtree in the past was their biggest red zone target. Now they did throw to Cordarrelle Patterson in the red zone last week. So, I mean, maybe there's just a 1-to-1 shift there. I don't expect there to be, but if you thought that he was going to be, if you thought he was going to see 20 touches, and that seems, 100% in the cards here at 6,200 on FanDuel, he's starting to look like a pretty attractive play.
Kind of a steal.
I think it'd be,
especially if you get bad news about Jamal Williams situation or something, I think it could be a really, really good spot.
Yep. And I think that people will do, I think they'll talk themselves into going there. And like I said, the one thing that I'm most encouraged about is the receptions. Like if he's going to be used, guys like this are always hard, like the LeGarrette Blunts of the world, like that you just don't, and Marshawn Lynch pretty much fall into this category. Guys that just, they're not going to, he's not in on passing downs. Like he's in there to run block mostly, or just run the ball downhill. The fact that they have thrown the ball to him a little bit actually makes me a little bit more bullish on him going forward.
I'll give you one more stat on Lynch too, to follow up on that before we move on. 2 weeks ago against New England, he had 11 of the team's 21 carries. Last week, he had 26 of the team's 34 carries. So I think that's a very, very positive trend going into it. And it's much better matchup than either of those last 2 weeks against New England and Denver.
Yep, the Giants defense is ranked in the bottom third in terms of DVOA this season. And they're even worse against the rush. They were supposed to be really good against the run this year. That has not worked out even in the slightest. All right, let's move on to, we got a couple more games here. Rams and Cardinals. We talked a ton about the Rams yesterday. We don't need to go back into it. We basically talked about every single guy on their team. Cup, Gurley, Watkins, and Goff. Goff, Gurley, Cup, and Watkins were the four guys. We talked about it with even throwing a nod at Josh Reynolds, possibly in GBP, if you thought Watkins was going to get the Patrick Peterson treatment. So go back and listen to our thoughts there. Arizona side, we've still seen outsized targets at times for guys like Larry Fitzgerald. It's hard to imagine Adrian Peterson getting into the run game here just because there stands to reason they're going to be down. Anything you like around the Arizona side of the ball?
Yeah, I mean, Fitzgerald continues to do some stuff. It's kind of a lot to pay for a guy with that quarterback situation. Kind of disappeared last week in spite of the target still being there. But Jacksonville obviously been somewhat good against the pass this season, so it's kind of hard to really put your finger on what's going on there. And then outside of him on Arizona, I'm not seeing a lot that I'm particularly bullish on. How about you?
I like a return to some target share here for Fitzgerald. I mean, Jacksonville is not just good. They're the number one passing defense in football, kind of by a lot. So
one in terms of total yards allowed. Are they number one in DVOA too? I don't have that open.
Yes, they're number one in DVOA. Yeah. And it's like, and by percentages, they're like kind of the runaway favorite too. Sure. Now they lost, they gained some ground too on New Orleans because of the Lattimore injury. So, but that helped them too. But yeah, they are by far and away the best passing defense. And I think that when you look at that and you see a down game for a guy like Fitzgerald, I don't totally excuse it, but I'm an apologist for guys like this. And then you go back two games ago where we caught 10 targets, 9 catches and 91 yards and a touchdown. So I think a return to that, this still isn't a fantastic matchup, but the Rams are a good defense too. So it's not like you're drawing, just like the bottom of the barrel defensive matchup, but in a game where it stands to reason, they're going to be playing catch up. And the Rams have been playing fast. Like the fact that the Rams have been passing so much lately have been allowing more team possessions just because they've been getting down the field and basically just smoking other teams' defenses and then just giving the other team the ball back pretty quickly. So I do think you see an uptick just in overall opportunity here for Fitzgerald. So I don't mind going back to him. Not in cash games. I don't think you can go there, but I think for tournaments. Carolina goes into place New Orleans. New Orleans is, I think, hoping to get Lattimore back this week. It's not completely sure if he's going to be back. We saw what happened to their secondary when he wasn't around last week. Let's start on the Carolina side. They are going to be without Greg Olsen again. We talked briefly about what we thought on the week 2 recap about Devin Funchess, but let's just kind of go back there for a second. Do you think Funchess, if there's not going to be any Lattimore here, and the other corner I think is hurt as well, do you like getting back to him for close to double-digit targets?
Yeah, I think something like that, 9.5, 10 targets is a reasonable expectation there. And obviously he can't actually have a half target. I'm just talking about for our projection purposes. I do not think that necessarily makes him a cash game play, but we see the upside, right? I mean, the 2-touchdown game against Miami and then the 12-target game last week, if you can kind of screw your eyes up a little bit and put those two games together, you could see a big tournament winning sort of performance out of him. And also just the simple fact that if it's working, there really aren't a lot of other options. New Orleans obviously ups the number of overall possessions in the game due to their fast-paced offense, and Carolina without a lot of other good skill position players, I think should be leaning on him. So I think he is a good play.
On the New Orleans side, if you had to take a guess at DraftKings and FanDuel, let's say, Alvin Kamara's ownership in cash games this week. What do you think? If we can maybe make a bet and we'll see who's closer. Where do you just at DraftKings is 8,400 and on FanDuel, I think he's the same price.
First of all, I think it'll be too high, but I want you to set the line and I pick over under. That's my preference. Because I have no clue off the top of my head. And I could say
over under 28%.
Under.
You think it'll be lower than 28%?
I think he'll be under 28%. I was gonna say 20 was on the top of my mind.
Yeah, I think I would love if he was anything over 20 because I think it's a terrible cash game play. We went through this on the recap the other day about some of our thoughts about what happens when you just can't, you simply cannot sustain this kind of performance over the long term. You can sustain it if you all of a sudden, like Mark Ingram wasn't around and you were going to get the ball 20 times or 25 times a game. But at this price for a guy that touches the ball, I don't know, 8 times, 14 times a game, things like that, it's just completely unsustainable. So I know that some people do not want to hear that and they get mad when they think you're just kind of knocking on Alvin Kamara for some reason. They say, what do you hate about Kamara? I'm like, I don't hate anything about him. The guy's awesome. I wish his team liked him more to give him the ball more.
I just don't think he's twice as good as peak LaDainian Tomlinson. That's what I have against him. You know, it's like,
well, the other thing is that FanDuel and DraftKings do these little things, these pesky little things called salaries, right? Like they're just like, unfortunately, they just continue to put salaries next to these guys' names. And as long as this guy's going to be ranked, or at least salary wise, in a tier with guys that carry the ball twice as much, if not more than him, then he's just simply not a player.
Here's an unpopular opinion. If you're in a season long league right this week and you have to decide between Leonard Fournette and Alvin Kamara, you should definitely play Fournette. That's what I would say.
Interesting. Yeah. You're in a good spot. You're in a good spot if you have the ability to bench one of those guys. All right. So anything else?
You get Kamara off the waiver wire 100% this season.
Oh, off the waiver wire. Yeah, yeah. Oh, sorry, I meant like this week. Anything else to like about the New Orleans side? The Ingram, I mean, is there a chance that we could buy low on Ingram if they just went, his price did actually drop a little bit, and he is the guy that sees more touches. Michael Thomas in the passing game, he's a guy we've been high on, and the targets just really haven't completely materialized for him in the short term. Anything else we've missed on New Orleans?
Definitely don't play Ingram. The touches are going the wrong direction for him, and he's still really expensive for a guy who had 11 carries last week. I guess you could think about Michael Thomas. I mean, you know, we've been kind of higher on him. I just want to check myself on Michael Thomas because I feel like we've just been higher on him than most people have been this season, and we haven't really gotten paid off for that recently. I do think you could see some percentage of these touchdowns that are all seem to be flowing towards Kamara head back towards Michael Thomas. I actually think he is a favorite to out-target Kamara this week in spite of, you know, Kamara's stock continuing to rise, and the fact that you can get him for 7,600 seems like a value. So, yeah, I would think about Thomas. I wouldn't be thrilled to pay him in cash games just because I think you'd be out on an island.
And the final Sunday game is the Eagles go in to play Seattle. So they fly across the country for the Sunday night game. Eagles are actually 5.5 favorites on the road against the Seattle team that struggled to run the ball this season. I'm wondering your thoughts on the Eagles. We haven't really had in the last week. It's been more than a month since we've been able to probably make any true determinations on what the Eagles' plan is in a close game. So last week they won 31-3. Yeah. Then they beat the Cowboys 37-9. Blitz the Broncos 51-23 and then 33-10 against the 49ers. So it goes all, to go all the way back to the Redskins game where the Eagles game that was even close. How do we start projecting a team like this when it's you know, they've just been running the ball a ton? Well, they just have Wentz just throw a touchdown every possession. And then once he's done throwing his touchdowns and they're killing a team, then they just start running the ball. How do we project a team like that when we're a long time since they played in a close game and kind of know what their plan is going to be in terms of usage there?
Well, one guy who's been solid, but I think you might even see a bigger breakout performance the first time they play a close game, is Alshon Jeffrey. He's been commanding better than 9 targets a week in the last, well, I guess exactly 9 targets a week in the last 3 weeks in spite of the blowouts. And he's caught a touchdown or more in each of his last 4 games. So I think he's, you know, being used in the red zone. He's being used to move the chains. I think 7,300 is probably too cheap for him going forward. And I think given that this game rates to be fairly close, I think he's a pretty reasonable high floor option.
Yep, and Seattle is still without Richard Sherman, so the wide receivers are drawing plus matchups, especially Jeffrey. And if you thought he was going to see 9 to 10 targets, especially if you thought Seattle could keep the game close and they were going to, or even just take the lead, he does strike me as having some upside here against the Seattle secondary that is just not the Seattle secondary of old. Then on the other side of the ball, on FanDuel, any interest in either of the quarterbacks here in cash games? These are guys that have ranked pretty highly, or they may actually just be 1-2 in overall fantasy performance this season in a game that looks like it could be close with points going up on the board. Could we make a case for either of these two guys in cash games, even at their prices?
Absolutely. I think both are solid plays. I think, you know, if you happen to decide that you don't want to go cheap at quarterback this week, which I think a fair number of people will do, I think these two are both in play and guys you should consider.
And the, I think between, if you had to pick between the two, they're the same price. If you had to go Wilson or Wentz, 8,200 and 8,000 for them respectively. Do you have a feeling one way or the other between those two guys?
I think I would probably go with Wilson just because he's probably represents a greater, there's a greater likelihood that he's involved in all of his team's offensive plays, or more of his team's offensive plays, just because the running game has been so bad, but it's awfully close. I think, you know, you can make a strong case either way, but yeah, I think Wilson, with a gun to my head.
I read a stat yesterday, and man, I can't remember who posted it. It might've been Chris Raybon, but from 444, and I hope I'm not misquoting this, who did it or who said it. But the thing was that Wilson had been involved in 82% of the Seattle scoring this year. Right. Which is just completely crazy because it's like, well, no one rushes the ball in at all. And so he leads the team in rushing, leads the team in passing, and he's where it starts and stops everything on offense. I think I would go with Wilson just from that standpoint too, knowing that it just seems so unlikely. It's just so hard for Seattle to jump out the huge leads and then to maintain them because they just can't run the ball even in the slightest. So it just falls on him to just have to run the ball. Two out of the last four games, he's got more than 75 yards rushing in them, and he's had a rushing touchdown on each of the last two. He's the entire team. So yes, if I was choosing between them, I would choose Wilson, and there's some chance we actually do end up going there in cash games. Even a slight bump to his overall projection would probably bring him to the top lineup. All right, we're done with the Sunday games. Monday games, Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, so you can just play Bell and Brown on those primetime slate and call it a day. We're from DFSR.com. DFSR.com/NBA will get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, NBA, you're all set to go. That's all covered under one subscription blanket. Go check it out. Go check out our members only chat. James and I are in there before, hour and a half before every lineup lock for basketball and football, just kind of talking. And guys and gals are in there all the day chatting as well. So go check that out. It's all free for 3 days and then just $34.95 a month after that. Buddy, enjoy week 13 in the NFL, and I will talk to you as soon as I hit stop recording this podcast.
Bye.